one of the things that we are doing is that we're actually coming into an organization and able to analyze the total population and show them the millions of dollars they're actually being left on the table because they're overlooking opportunities that exist. And these opportunities, we're able to identify because we are more comprehensive compared to other systems that are able to analyze the patients. So we are much more holistic in our analysis. And second, we are much more scalable. So we analyze the total population.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you're keeping well. Medication-related problems are a massive burden on healthcare systems, leading to adverse events, suboptimal treatments, and skyrocketing costs. MDI Health has developed an AI-driven pharmacology platform that autonomously optimizes personal medication regimens by analyzing thousands of pharmacological and patient parameters. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS, and joining me today is Avishai Ben-Tovim, CEO and co-founder of MDI Health. In this episode, Avishai will share how their powerful AI identifies high-risk patients, provides clinicians with evidence-based recommendations to reduce risks in real time, and helps payers and providers execute on those recommendations, ultimately reducing total care costs while improving quality. But enough from me, let's get started and hear about MDI Health. Avishai Ben-Tovim, the CEO and co-founder of MDI Health. I'm really excited to have you here joining me today on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. How are you doing?
Good. Excited as well.
Yeah. So Avishai, where are you joining us from today?
I'm calling from New Jersey.
Oh, cool. And where are you from originally?
Originally from Israel.
Oh, very good. And how long have you been in the States?
I just moved here last year.
Oh, great. Welcome. I also am living somewhere where I'm not originally from Colorado, now in the UK. I hope that you're enjoying yourself. Jersey and New York are a great place to be for any entrepreneurs, especially for healthcare. But let's start off and, you know, can you tell us a little bit about MDI Health and what you all do?
Of course. So we are on a mission to prevent medication-related problems at scale and help health systems and health plans are reduced in total cost of care by also providing better health outcomes for the members and patients. So what we build is kind of the AI co-pilot for medication management. And we are actually taking a huge problem, medication-related problems that become the fourth leading cause of death, $500 billion problem. On the other end, we took something that has been proven to be efficient called comprehensive medication reviews, usually done by experts. And we build a technology to make it accessible to all polypharmacy patients, which are patients taking multiple drugs on a regular basis, and helping them, making sure that they are taking the most personalized and optimized medication treatment for them. And by doing so, we are actually preventing hospitalizations and reducing our costs.
And can you give me an idea of where in the patient journey your service would pop up? Is it, say, in a annual health check, you know, when, you know, the physician's checking all the different prescriptions and maybe reviewing which ones to deprescribe? Is it earlier in health journey? When would a clinician use your solution?
Yeah, so our vision then is to provide our solution at every point of decision. So you're going to meet your physician. Our system will be there to help them make sure they're prescribing the right medication from the get-go. But currently, we operate more as a population health tool, I would say. So we're helping health payers analyzing the total population, analyzing each member as good as an expert, identifying the high-risk members, knowing upfront what are the clinical accommodations need to be made, knowing what will be the financial impact of these accommodations, and then actually trying to send these recommendations to the physicians in order to both correct, I would say, suboptimal medication treatments, also educate physicians to be able to improve their future prescriptions.
Great. Yeah, navigating the triad between the patient, the provider, and the payer is the job to get done in health innovation. And I want to come back to this and learn how that signal gets from the payer to the provider. But we'll speak about that when we get to your go-to-market. But Can we take a step back and tell me about the origin story? So what is the founding story of MDI Health? You know, how'd you come up with this idea?
Yeah, so I know my partner, what, 15 years now. She's married to one of my best friends, and she's one of the top experts in pharmacotherapy. She's the former head and founder of the pharmacovigilance department at Minnesota Health. She's also the former head and founder of the clinical pharmacy services for the second largest HMO in the world. And she also had a private clinic that provided consultations for complex polypharmacy patients. So she really spent her whole life trying to solve medication-related problems and provide better medication treatments for her patients. And as a friend going on the family vacation, I was just amazed by the impact she was having on patients and what was the success rate she was having. So, for example, she had stories about patients going into her clinic, and in a few months, their health problems were solved. I'm talking about people stopping hallucinations, people that she literally had a patient that got into her clinic in a wheelchair, and after a few months, he was walking again. So his stability improved that much. He had the Parkinson. Of course, the Parkinson did not disappear, but his stability improved that much that he was walking again. And it's all because of his medication. So I was amazed with the impact. I was amazed. I was blown by the success rate. And I was trying to convince her, and talking about back in 2019, so it's before the AI became so popular, I was trying to convince her that what she was doing ahead, we can compute that and we can make it accessible. At the beginning, she said it's impossible. These days, she would say it's impossible to do it without the system. But it all came from her own need, that after she was looking at the system available in the market, she couldn't find any system that can really help her scale her work. And then she was convinced that we should take the task of making an impact and creating the system that will finally really provide personalized care at scale. So this is how we started the company. So I came from AI background. I managed AI companies before. She came from the, I would say, the scientific background. And together with our first co-founder, Ivan Kalib, our CTO, we co-founded the company.
So I know we're going to get into, potential negative drug-on-drug effects and how it could impact people. But you think about the maxim, do no harm, and it's just remarkable that sometimes less medication is actually the best prescription. The difficulty is the machine, the innovation machine, really is incentivized to prescribe more, develop new therapeutics, and there's very little incentive to prescribe less. Obviously, that's changing a lot as we shift toward risk-bearing provider organizations, but what a great insight. Tell us more about you, Avishai. So you used to work in fintech, you've worked in marketing technology, you've been a senior leader at COO level at multiple organizations. Tell us about your background story. You can go back as far as you want. This can be a long show if we'd like, but how did your path guide you into healthcare?
So you're absolutely right. I mean, I had the opportunity to do many different things. Started as a strategic consultant. I've done it in many different industries and different geographies. I started my high-tech career in sales, business development, been promoted to chief revenue officer and then COO. And I was really enjoying the possibility to get things off the ground and making an impact. But a lot of the impact back then was all about, how can we make more money for the company? And I was looking for something more meaningful. I think healthcare is a great place that you can put your skills into something that really helps a society. So once I knew what the REIT was doing, and I knew that this is something that is right and also has a very big business potential, we just knew this is the right thing to do. So this is how we came about co-founding MDI.
That's great. And of course, you had your relationship with your co-founder as well. I know she's married to your best friend, but the co-founding partnership, it's almost a marriage in and of itself. You're really creating something from nothing, and trust is paramount. So I'm sure that she was part of your inspiration. Let's think back to, some of the early days, when you were first trying to get buy-in and adoption from, your very first payer customers. And you can let us know if your first customers were payers or whether they were risk-bearing provider orgs. But, what was it like, building the initial MVP and winning those first customers? And I mean, like really the first ones, right? Going from an idea on a deck, to actually deploying something. What did that look like?
So in healthcare, unlike other industries, it's not easy, as you know. You need to show clinical validation. You need to, no one wants to be first. So I think this is not actually my prior experiences coming from other industries really was helpful. And we were just both lucky, but also resourcefulness enough to get to the right organization to prove our product and to prove our differentiation. So we've done a clinical study with a big medical academic center that has just been published. But at the same time, we're already able to start, I would say, convincing investors to back us, which was difficult at the time. But that has been proven to be the right decision to all parties, because the more we were able to move forward, the more evidence we were able to connect. So both in terms of clinical studies, but also in terms of clients that were starting to use the product, saw the reaction, and provide references to the next line. So I really feel that in healthcare, it's about being lean, but also knowing how to do some workarounds in order to get to what you need to, in order to get enough validation. So every time you can get a chance to work with a bigger client, and fortunately to us, we're able to demonstrate the value with one of the top health firms in the US, one of the biggest ones. I scale with them and show our value. So that was, for one hand, very lucky for us, but also required a lot of hard work and a lot of belief in what we do, and also evidence, all the coming back there. You cannot convince a chief medical officer just with pretty words and a nice stack. You really need to come with an evidence showing that your system does what it's supposed to do. And also solving huge problems. It's also, it's all about priorities.
Yeah, of course, compared to other sectors, you and I both worked in the marketing sector, on the paid media side, and I believe you worked more on the earned media side and optimization. But you can make whatever spurious claims you want within that space. Obviously it'll be validated when budgets are reassigned and downstream revenues are counted. But obviously it's difficult evidence generation, but it almost gives you a tailwind and a competitive moat in healthcare, because you go through the work of doing the clinical validation, and then it is based in reason, and it's something you can really lean on. Can you tell us the details of that study? So you mentioned that you just published this clinical validation study. What were the endpoints? What was the investigative technique? We'd be really curious to learn more about that.
Of course. So what we've done, we actually took real cases of patients, and we gave our algorithm to analyze them, external clinical pharmacists to analyze the same cases. And there were a panel of two judges who didn't know who said what. So they were blinded to where the recommendation came from, and they needed to say what was true, false, and if there's anything missing. And we were able to demonstrate not just as good as results as experts, actually even better results. And now we are actually repeating this study also with Stanford. We're starting that now, and also we have another clinical study that we are about to publish that are already showing tremendous impact on the patients over a course of a full year. So it's a prospective study that we're running. So this is the thing that we've done in order to show it in terms of clinical validation. But at the same time, as I said, we have users using our system on a daily basis, and I think their adoption rates is the biggest proof that our system is accurate and produce great impact. So yeah, that's in terms of what we've done in clinical study. The other thing that you mentioned about the thing you need to overcome is a health startup. So I would say validation, just the first phase. Unfortunately, every time you think, oh, if you're just going to get this validation, I can, get to where I need to. So it's always not just enough to show the product works. It's also about showing the ROI and showing the right, who in the organization you are targeting and what exactly the KPIs you're going to need.
Can you tell me about your ideal customer persona? And then you just mentioned, that there's different stakeholders within the organization that you need to sell to and compel. Who are those key people for you across the customers you've won to date?
So currently we mostly work with health payers and value-based providers, and we are most suitable for organization to pick for risk. If the organization is currently paying for unnecessary hospitalizations and unnecessary Rx costs derived from suboptimized medication treatments. This is our ideal client, I would say specifically Medicare Advantage plans. And within these organizations, you would have the chief medical officer, the chief pharmacy, and the person who actually owns the P&L of this population that is trying to drive the cost down. That will be the best, I would say, personas that should try to use a system such as MDI to reduce the total cost of care and provide better health outcomes for their members. So that in terms of who are we serving, but our technology is actually applicable to many other things. So we currently actually evaluating expansion to other areas as well. So on one hand, we are a solution for reducing total cost of care, but on the other end, we're also looking at helping existing workflows that are currently being done in the industry related to medication abuse. So you can think of us both as an efficiency tool, but also as a solution to end-to-end solution for reducing total cost of care.
Great. And when you sell in, are you displacing a existing technology or is this a new technology that's being adopted and the ROI needs to be great enough to justify the additional investment?
Yeah, this is a great question because we are very, very clear about not trying to replace any system or existing processes. One of the things that we are doing is that we're actually coming into an organization and able to analyze the total population and show them the millions of dollars they're actually being left on the table because they're overlooking opportunities that exist. And these opportunities we're able to identify because we are more comprehensive compared to other systems that are able to analyze the patients. So we are much more holistic in our analysis. And second, we are much more scalable. So we analyze the total population. That means that all these health plans might think, oh, body based wires, well, the whole thing that maybe if I'm working with this PBM, or maybe I have this, you know, care management team in place, so I already have it covered. So the first thing that we prove is that despite what they might think, there's actually a huge opportunity that's being missed. So we actually, I would put it in this words, how much money they're actually losing every year by not working with MDI. So we are 100% complementary to what they're doing. Once we show the value, this is where we have different options about how to go and implement it with our tools in a way that is very, very effective in terms of ROI. But the whole beauty is that we're trying to provide a solution that first doesn't replace or trying to interfere with existing workflows. And second, incremental value compared to the other things that they have in place. So we're really trying to provide something that will be, I would kind of call it a no-brainer solution that just, you know, we are also willing to take risk on our contracts, meaning that when you come in, we say, we're going to lower your risk. We're going to show you how much impact we're going to make on your population. Even if you don't have the staff in place, we're able to come in and we can even do it with our own staff as a fully managed services. If you have your staff, we can just give you the technology. We're going to measure the impact and we're going to take risk on what we are able to produce. So it's really a solution that on the outside looks like every health plan should have and will adopt in terms of it doesn't take much from their end, but from the other end, the impact is very, very significant.
So Avishai, we're on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. So of course, I want to talk about your core technology. You know, you mentioned AI. So tell me about the models that derive the predictions that make your medication management solution valuable and differentiated. So where are you sourcing the data to train your models? You know, how do you think about updating the models over time and promoting those updated models into production? Tell us a little bit more about the core predictive engine behind MDI Health.
Yeah, so we are different in the sense that we deliberately developed an evidence-based algorithm. And this is really important when we're talking about clinical accommodations. We are not a black box generative AI, big data model that you cannot really go and explain. When we provide a suggested recommendation, we provide all the evidence supporting that. So you can go back to the literature. It's all based on pharmacology. We always give the clinician at the end all the information he needs in one screen. So it's his decision at the end. So we're still keeping the clinician in the driving seat, but we're actually helping get to the problem and the right solution in a few clicks of a button instead of a process that used to take 75 minutes. So back to your question, we trained our system by comparing it all the time against experts analyzing the same cases. So it was trained, the benchmark is an expert analyzing the same cases, and this is how we train our system. But at the end of the day, we mapped everything into pharmacological rules that are currently, you know, anyone can know there's a connection there, but how do you aggregate all these connections together to get the same outcomes as an expert analyzing this case? So when you mentioned before one-to-one drug interaction, this is exactly what we were trying to actually create the new generation. So the first generation was just, you know, let's bombard the physician with the alerts. We are in the next generation of trying to take everything about this patient, all these known rules, I would say, or known connections, and analyze them all together to get already to a clean recommendation that the clinician should evaluate in order to take the best decision for the specific patient.
And can you tell me about what you do when guidelines conflict with one another? Because of course, we wish we lived in a world where all clinical decisions were based off of well-replicated meta-analyses of, you know, a decade worth of published evidence, right? But, with COVID-19, we obviously learned how that can happen all the time. And not everything's an infectious disease disaster. There's plenty of other indications where guidelines are updated infrequently. They're updated with very narrow research questions. So I'm sure you encounter situations where there's evidence that conflicts with different medication dispensing recommendations. How do you handle those conflicts today?
So we have a decision support system. At the end of the day, everything is the decision of the clinician. But what our system is able to do is, as I said, analyze the case as good as an expert. So if you're going to put a clinical pharmacist to analyze this case, he will come up with a recommendation for the doctor to evaluate. And the second thing that is you need to understand about the current situation is that most of the times it's not about the clinician looking at the problems, looking at possible solutions and thinking, oh, should I prefer this one over this one? Most of the times it's blind spots. They're just not aware of the problem. Sometimes they don't have the data. Sometimes they don't have the time to analyze a patient in the personal level. For example, most physicians have like 10, 15 minutes with the patient every month or so to do, as I said before, to do a comprehensive medication review, like 75 minutes. So the biggest problem is not about what to prioritize. The biggest problem is that no system is there at the moment to flag the right thing to do. You do have a lot of alert systems, but they are being overlooked and being overridden by physicians because they're just tuned toward bombarding them with 80% follow-ups. So the whole concept of MDI is to move away from alerts and actually flagging already the insights. And I'm specifically saying insights and not alerts. So now you are aware as a clinician. It's still going to be your decision as a clinician, but you already know what are the problems, you already know what you need to be assessing, and you already know in a click of a button what can be, you know, approved and sent over either to the patient or the provider. But the thing is that the system took all this analysis and done it for you. So now you can focus on what are the problems for this specific patient and what can be done.
Hmm. Can you tell me about any customers, you know, today that are benefiting from your solution? Do you have any stories you can share? At Amazon, we're customer obsessed, so I always love to hear some customer examples.
Yeah, so we don't disclose names of customers, of course, but I can say that, we are working with one of the biggest health plans in the U.S. We have an HMO using us. We have very, very, I would say we have customers both from the health plan side and also from the value-based provider side. So we're applicable for both. And we're also looking at expanding out more use cases that will enable us to also maybe assist nursing homes and long-term care pharmacies and such things.
That's great. Let's shift gears and talk about the company a little bit. So, you know, how have you grown as a leader since founding MDI Health? And how have you thought about your first hires, making sure you had the right people on the bus, developing organizational culture? You know, what is it like to work at your company?
I mean, the thing I'm proud the most of, I think maybe it's the biggest tip I can you know, say to anyone who co-founded companies that you should look at culture and the people you bring on board from day one. This is, I think, maybe the top priority for the CEO. This is the thing that you cannot control everything. So we are not a company that I think is very different than others. I'm not a control freak. Everyone, you know, have their own responsibilities. And the only way for you to delegate is to bring the right people and to build a culture that is based on ownership, that is based on openness, that, you know, we embrace feedback. We're trying to learn and improve, and that we are not afraid to make mistakes and just, you know, try to fix them as quick as possible. This is something that we worked very hard from the beginning. I'm very, very proud of every person we brought to the company. I'm very proud of the fact that we have almost no regrettable attrition with employees. So we have people with us from day one. I can't think of anyone that maybe one person that I regret that left the company, all the rest are with us until today.
And when you're building your culture, did you build it bottom up or top down? So top down would be, you know, you and your founding team, you know, shut yourselves into a room. You think about what it is to be, you know, at MDI Health, what makes, you know, you unique in driving innovation. Perhaps you codify it into a set of values. You come out of the room, you have a big meeting, you show everybody, look at what we did. This is amazing. Let's get on board. You know, or you could solicit input from the team and develop it more bottom up. I've heard of people doing it both ways, but I'm curious, yeah. You know, how did you develop and codify your culture at your company? And do you think it worked well?
Yeah, it worked very well. When we started, I don't have the time at the beginning to really think about your core values and your mission and, you know, to put it in writing. Just a few people, you know, just a co-founding team together with just a few employees, and you're just trying to get things done. But what I think was very clear to us is that we need to allocate time to think about these things and trying to formalize them. So I think probably after our seed round, we just sat and put everything in writing. But it's actually, so I would say it's both. At the beginning, it was, I would say, top down. So we were affecting our employees by our personalities. But when we were sitting down to write our values and culture, it was based on the culture that was already existing in the company. So it's kind of like, again, the chicken thing. So it started with the founders, and then employees are knowing how to, you know, some employees affect that, but then you formalize it when you're looking at what you created and saying, okay, from now on, I want every employee that joins the company to have the same values as me.
I really
so
like
care
that.
About the mission.
Yeah. I always said that culture is, lived, not spoken, right? So it's what you do. It's not what you say. And essentially, the culture of the company is the mean of the working styles of the founders, right? You can say whatever you want, but how you conduct a meeting, you know, whether you respond to an email at 10 o'clock at night, whether there's like a weekend where people are kind of like stepping above to make sure the milestones met, you know, these little things, they become the embodied culture within the team. And then as you scale, it becomes more important to codify it in order to be able to influence, you know, beyond your immediate sphere, and be able to, you know, have people rowing in the same direction. But I appreciate that you engage the team so that they're effectively bridging for you, right? Because, you know, you've created something new and novel together.
I would say, though, that you mentioned, you know, how you run meetings and you answer emails at night. My belief in the number one core value for the company is care for the company and the mission. I believe very much that if people care about something, the rest is just derived from that. And this is why I look the most to people that join us, is that they really care about what we do, because you're going to have hurdles and you're going to have bumps on the road. And the only way for you to overcome them is you have people that are really driven to solve the problem you're trying to, which is one of the biggest problems. So they have a very good reason to be mission driven. So I'm less interested of, you know, some of our employees will need more flexibility. Some, you know, a lot of them are parents. I don't care if they answer emails at 10 p.m. at night, but I do care about if this is like an important client or this is something that the company would be impactful for them, they will do the right thing. Sometimes the right thing is to answer an email at 10 at night. Sometimes the right thing is to get on a plane and go to meet the client. But I'm not going to say what is the right thing. Just this is for them. I trust them to know what is the right thing because they care for the company and they care for the mission.
That's fantastic. What goals do you have for your team over the coming years? What's your ambition?
So I think we're in a very interesting point in time. We have unbelievable technology. I would say even proper technology. I think we're still in the challenge of educating the market, because one of the challenges we have is that, you know, even though we are showing millions of dollars in savings, you need to shift people's mind from doing what they used to do. Okay, I have to do MTMs, I have to do, you know, I don't know, star ratings, I have to do things that I'm being forced to do. Now you get this complementary solution that enables you to demonstrate a very big ROI, but no one told me at the beginning of the year I have to do it. So we're trying to both educate people on our solution, educate people on our value. So I would say the main goal for us is to gradually getting to the tipping point of getting the market to understand this is a huge problem. It's not being addressed, and there is a technology that can solve it for them. So I think this is the point in time that we are right now, and it means that we will continue developing our technology and at the same time build the operational marketing and sales in order to support that. And also looking at opportunities to scale even faster through other opportunities that always come along.
What have you found is most successful for driving that market education? Is it events, you know, just customer engagements and direct sales?
We see a lot of value in conferences, works very well for us. But the thing that works best in healthcare and we can get better at is relationships and network. It's something that we are seeing. But the truth is there is no shortcuts. It's just a lot of hard work, showing more evidence, improving from one presentation to another, hearing what the client is saying, sometimes doing changes. I can, you know, we're talking right now. Maybe next time we're going to talk in a year time, maybe we'll be doing other refinements and other changes. But one thing is always on our mind, which is we are looking at this huge problem and we're saying we are going to solve it. So when you have this state of mind, I just believe that all the rest is just a journey, but you know you're going to get there.
So Avishai, when we break and you go on and you continue the rest of your day and you finish up and you think back on this conversation, what question are you going to wish that I had asked you?
Probably the thing that I would to ask me is, why do I believe that healthcare organizations do not always do what is right for the members?
So why would a healthcare organization not always do what's in the best interest of their members?
Because I think the incentives are currently not set right in health in the US. And this is something that I hope CMS and others are currently trying to fix in health plans. I think that we are seeing a lot of trends in the right direction, both in terms of interoperability and getting the data that everyone can really look at the patient holistically. And we are looking at solutions that are trying to look more holistically about patients. But I definitely think that this sub-optimization that everyone is just trying to optimize to something specific. Okay, I'm just looking right now at specialty drugs. Or right now, I'm just looking at kidney disease. I'm not trying to say, I'm actually looking at the patient. And I'm looking at the population. And we want to really make, I would say, a reduction in total cost of care. I would say sub-optimized incentives that creates a very inefficient system. And the thing that NDI is trying to do, it's trying on one hand to make something that, as I said at the beginning, already proven to be efficient and effective and reducing problems and make it accessible. And for us to do it, it means that we also need the ecosystem to gradually move into thinking, how can I look at members holistically? How can I break, or I would say, look not just in terms of a health plan, but trying to affect the clinical role in order as a health plan to spend less money on unnecessary hospitalizations and others. Because right now, the biggest problem is that everything is just devolves to the patient. So if I'm a health plan, I'm going to see last year that I paid more, I'm just going to ask for more premiums. This is why, you know, health costs in the US just go higher and higher. So for me, I would say that the biggest challenge of the industry is how can we better incentivize the whole system so health plans and providers can work more in line, both in terms of data exchange and also in terms of solutions, that can really improve everyone, because our solution is doing good for the patient, is actually going to improve the physician's life, both in terms of efficiency and also in terms of why they became doctors. They became doctors because they want to provide better. It's not that they don't want to, they just don't have the time. And also the health plan doesn't want to pay for things that are not necessary. So I just wish, and this is the thing that I want to take on this conversation, that we will continue going in this path of leveling the field and putting in place the right incentives that solutions such as NDI can be fully embraced and not having hurdles of data and other things like that.
Great. Well, Avishai, thank you so much for joining me on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.